540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Five fired Memphis police officers are facing multiple charges, including second-degree murder in connection with the death of Tyre Nichols. Shelby County District Attorney Steve Mulroy.
The world is watching us, and we need to show the world what lessons we can learn from this tragedy.
Attorneys for the Nichols family say the 29-year-old died at the hospital after being shocked, pepper sprayed, and restrained by the officers during a traffic stop. Video is set to be released tomorrow evening, and some U.S. cities have been gearing up for possible protests. CBS's Jeff Pagaz in Memphis.
There's been planning and preparation that began at police departments nationwide, and police departments were told that the video would be released Friday evening after schools were out, after businesses were closed for the day. In D.C., the police department there was fully activated, all sworn personnel called in. In New York, the NYPD will go on heightened alert, and officers will be deployed to the hot spots where protests have happened in the past.
Following some highly publicized incidents, the National Archives is asking former U.S. presidents and vice presidents to recheck their personal records for any classified documents. CBS's Steve Dorsey in Washington.
The National Archives request was sent to representatives for as far back as the Reagan administration. The National Archives says it's to ensure compliance with the Presidential Records Act. One spokesman for former President George W. Bush tells CBS he's, quote, confident that no such materials are in our possession.
The letter was first reported by CNN. Conservative attorney John Eastman, a major player in efforts to keep former President Trump in power, is facing disciplinary charges from the California State Bar. More from CBS's Steve Futterman.
The State Bar says it intends to seek John Eastman's disbarment. It's accusing him of assisting efforts by former President Trump to overturn the legitimate results of the 2020 election. The charges allege that Eastman made false and misleading statements at the January 6, 2021 rally in Washington that preceded the insurrection at the Capitol. Eastman disputes the charges. He says the state bar has become politicized.
Feds say that they've hacked the hackers. Attorney General Merrick Garland describes the initial 1-2 punch the FBI dealt to a prolific ransomware operation known as Hive.
First, they infiltrated a victim's system and stole sensitive data. Next, the affiliates deployed malicious software, encrypting the victim's system, rendering it unusable.
Authorities say the disruption prevented the group from collecting more than $130 million in ransomware demands from more than 300 targets. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual.
The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin's record budget surplus keeps growing. The Legislative Fiscal Bureau now says state government could be $7.1 billion in the black in July. That's a half billion dollars more than expected. Almost 90% of that increase comes from money that was set aside during the past 2 years, but not spent. Lawmakers and the governor are talking about what to do with the money. If you don't have high-speed internet where you live, now is the time to fix that. Anyone can challenge the Federal Communications Commission's draft of the National Broadband Map. You can check your address to see if you should be getting it. Washington is trying to get high-speed internet access to as many people as possible. In sports, the Bucks beat Denver last night 107-99. Maryland shelled the Badgers 73-55. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does a $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work alongside Civic Media's amazing sales team to create a custom radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. The $1 million advertising giveaway today only. There are some rules. Go to civicmedia.us/million.
It makes me smile, and you have a piano, but if you can play the Peanuts theme song.
Oh,
oh my gosh.
You know he can.
Yes.
On the Devil's Radio.
Saturday nights, 6 p.m. to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Pat, I feel like all the women we have on our show, like our co-hosts, always get too famous for us. And then
I would just like to think that we are fertile ground from which they can blossom. We are the manure from which they spring.
The manure from which they spring. I was going to say holding fort, but I think your metaphor is way better.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station. The Shaw, 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls, always streaming at
from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about, lots of stuff on the Social Security front. Medicare, again, still under attack. Going to get to a bunch of that. Also, the corporate control of our media front and center. But going to start with tomorrow, the news tomorrow, some body cam footage coming out of Memphis, Tennessee, I believe it is. Five police officers were fired, have been arrested. I'm looking at this going, this has got to be bad. The story, not too long ago of this Tyree Nichols, a 29-year-old guy, pulled over at a traffic stop the beginning of the month. I'm waiting to see just how horrible this is when you have the police chief coming out and saying, hey, don't riot. It's going to be bad. Now, there's never anything positive in this, but the five police officers were all African-American, all black cops. And this isn't for me a white-black issue. It's never been. It's been a power issue. It's been a poverty issue. It's a lot of that. It's how we train our police departments. So I got a bunch of emails today of people going, this is why we need to defund the police. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I've never been a defund the police person. I think you need police. I think you need better police. I think you need people who de-escalate things. It's a tough job, and I admit it's a tough job. But you need people who are going to be a little more conscious. And it's not a military. I mean, we have turned our police departments, and this was strategic, into little militaries. We've given them surplus military armors. We got my police department, little town, got a freaking tank. What do police departments need with a tank? I know they go and they bust drug dealers and but this kind of war mentality, this filters down into just traffic stops. And I was having a conversation with my wife, and I've had this conversation with the kids. If you need something, if you need to check on me, don't call the police. Because sadly, a lot of the mental health checks that, hey, I'm worried about my neighbor, can you send someone over? And badly, because we haven't equipped our police departments with the ability to deal with all of these problems and all these crises. And understand, they're at the bottom of the heap. And I'm not justifying what these cops did. I'm waiting to see how horrible these videos are going to be. I mean, it's angering, it's frustrating, it's heartbreaking, but it's something we have to solve, because as many people as I know go, this is why we need to abolish. No, it's never going to happen. Stop that. Stop saying dumb stuff that's never going to happen. How do we fix this problem? And for me, one of the things that I think is most important is that we recognize it is a tough job, and we recognize that they don't have the tools to deal with what they need especially with all of the wide and diverse problems we have. And look, understand, our population now is much more heavily armed, much more likely to have guns and weapons than probably at any point in my lifetime. Now, I was explaining to my son that, you know, back in the old days, you know, cops were, you know, they were, when they arrested somebody, put your hands on the car and they put your hands behind your back. And, you know, they did horrible stuff. Don't get me wrong. But it wasn't this kind of this gang mentality where every time you see an arrest, they're tackling someone to the ground and, you know, someone's laying on their legs, someone's laying on their back. Complete disregard for the individual. And I get it. It's the safety of the officers. And look, I'll be honest. If I were a policeman, I actually don't know how I would react in a lot of situations. You know, as I've always thought, you know, there's my grandfather's statement of, I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6. And that mentality, I got to think, permeates because we don't have laws that stop people from having weapons of war. And our media culture continues to push this narrative that it's an us or them. Even cops don't want bad cops in their ranks. So whenever these things, these appalling, heinous, these outrageous things come up, and trust me, it's going to be bad. When you see the police chief come out and lay out this groundwork and you know, make the case of, you know, please don't burn our city down. Please don't riot. Please don't cause what comes of these tragedies. Because they know it's going to be, it looks really bad. How do we fix the system? How do we go in and root out, well, what seems to be a huge problem? Now, I know, it's easy to throw stones, but this is where policy matters. This is where policy matters, and having people coming in who are able to de-escalate situations. Now, look, I've been stopped at traffic stops as an old white guy, and even then, the situations get somewhat sometimes elevated where they shouldn't. Okay, you pulled me over, write the ticket. You don't need a lecture, just write the ticket. We need to, and again, does this come back to training? Does this come back to, you know, I don't know yet. I don't have the answer. But I know that these things keep popping up. And I know that it's not helpful. So policy-wise, where do we go? Have you had a problem? Have you been pulled over? Have you seen this? Because look, I know when here in Pennsylvania, when they closed the state hospitals, and they basically, you know, let all these people out, these state mental hospitals, and all these people with mental health issues were just dropped into the streets. It was law enforcement who had to go and clean that up. It was law enforcement who had to deal with the homelessness problem because, you know, they're the enforcers. And I remember at the time, in a very bipartisan way, the then governor, Ed Rendell, and the mayor at the time, who was a Republican. So you had the governor who was a Democrat, the mayor was a Republican. Both of their offices contacted me when I started complaining about the fact that they closed the hospitals and it caused a homelessness problem because of the mental health, the mental health problems of these people on the streets. And, you know, these people being harassed by police and arrested and all of this bipartisan. You know, telling me it wasn't a problem. Again, laying this stuff at the feet of the police. So in no way, shape, or form am I justifying what these cops did. I hope they get everything that they deserve, everything that they've earned in this. But tearing things down and burning things down, that's not necessarily going to be helpful. Because all it does is harden the opponents. The other side, the people who run around with we support the police flags, you know them. Those are the same ones who were stabbing policemen with those same flags on January 6th. There is a way to reach across that divide and say, we want a better policing system. We want one that's fair. We want one that's not confrontational and dangerous when it doesn't have to be. A simple traffic stop that escalates into someone being shot and killed or beaten and mugged or you know, whatever. I'm sorry, is just insane. But I want to hear your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. Just had to get that out of my system a little bit. And look, you know, this is where every time this comes up, I have these conversations with my kids, especially my son. I go, well, look, you know, the reality is no matter how right or wrong you are, the place to argue is never on the side of the road. When you're in the streets and the cops being a jerk even, fine. You know, write the ticket. You know, yes, sir, no, sir, whatever you want. You're the man. This is why we have a court system. But I'd love to hear your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. Fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, I come back to this, and the simple reality is we can do better. I think we have to do better. This is not something that can continue. It just seems out of hand. Let's go to the phones. We got Alice on line one. How you doing, Alice?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. I wanted to tell you about my experience back in 2000 with the state policeman. The worst experience I've ever had in my life. I was going to work, and I lived, I don't know, 13, 14 miles away from where I worked. And I got to a main intersection, and this cop car with the lights comes flying up, blocking me because I was going to merge into the main highway. And I rolled the window down, and I said, excuse me, officer, is there an issue? And he screamed, put your hands out the windows with your palms facing outward so I can see them. And I thought, oh, my God, what's going on here? So, you know, of course I did this. Now, mind you, I am like I'm not even 5'2". So I'm thinking, do I look dangerous? And I said to him, you know, what did I do? And he was like, you almost hit me back there 12 miles ago. I'm like, what? He said, you almost hit me head on. And I thought, I think I would have noticed it if I would almost hit a black and white state police cruiser, you know?
Wow.
I said, okay. So he said, let me see your license and registration. And I'd just gotten the automobile I was driving. It was like maybe 2 days old for me. And I said, well, I have the pink slip in my insurance card, but I just bought this. And I pulled out my wallet. I said, I'm going to get my wallet, got my wallet out to get my driver's license. He goes, let me see your other driver's license. And I said, looked at him. I said, what other driver's license? He said, your driver's license from the other state. I said, what other state?
So who, and, do you think you were somebody else?
Yeah, apparently that's what had happened. Somebody with a similar automobile or something. Anyways, I ended up, he gave me a ticket, and the way he treated me then, I was like, I'm fighting this.
You fight everything.
And I had called when he went back to check my license and stuff. I hurried up and called work, and I said, look, I'm pulled over here. I don't know what in the world's going on. If I'm not there in 15 minutes, somebody call the, you know, the state police and find out what's going on, because they have no clue. And when he came back, he wasn't quite as snippy and stuff, what he was, and he'd put his gun back in the holster. I'm going to tell you what. He charged me with, I forget what it was. It was this humongous fine. Instead of just saying, so I called the next day. I called and talked to his commanding officer at the state police barracks, and I said, told him the whole thing. And they ended up dropping it down to failure to stop and yield or something, instead of just saying, you know, he thought you were somebody else. We had something going on, you know. But, yeah.
So why are you getting a ticket for that?
I was like, oh, my God.
Wow. So yeah, everyone's got one of those.
I share that with you.
No, I appreciate it, Alice. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
No, she hits on something that's interesting. Again, one of the things I tell my kids, if you ever get pulled over, I mean, turn on the lights inside the car, turn off the music, roll down the windows, hands firmly on the top of the steering wheel. You do not want to look like a threat in any way, shape, or form, to give any excuse for, oh, and no sudden movements. Now, this is coming from an old white guy. Now, granted, I grew up in a housing project where I was the minority in a minority community, so maybe that's part of it. But on the side of the road, you want them feeling as safe as they can possibly feel, and don't argue. That's not the place for it. Arguing with them on the side of the road, as I told my kid, you lose every time because you just don't. That's not the place for it. But it's going to be interesting to see how this plays itself out. I wanted to get to. I came across this CNN poll that points out that 73% of us aren't paying that are saying that the Republicans aren't paying enough attention to the real problems facing the country. Only 27% think that House Republicans have the right priorities, and it got me in this world of thinking that, you know, I'm hoping this is this moment where people are paying attention to, you know, this horrible tax scheme that they've thrown out there. Because look, I've been gutted, I've been just, you know, swamped with emails from people who are concerned about what the GOP is doing to make the lives of average, everyday working people like you and me worse. And understand, as I say all the time, Republicans hate working people. Just look at what they're doing. Look at that tax sham. Look at their attacks on collective bargaining rights. Look at this debate ceiling debacle. The fact that they're going to use the debt ceiling to hold Social Security and Medicare hostage. That was interesting. I got a lengthy email from Mike that I wanted to spend a couple of seconds on because he pointed out, he said, look, you know, I saw your interview with Alex Lawson of Social Security Works, you know, talking about, you know, Social Security and Medicare. And he said, look, this is the holy trinity of Republican hate, Medicare, Social Security. And I think he meant Medicaid because, you know, these programs, as he points out, don't serve the corporate masters. There isn't a huge profit motive to be made. They can't put money in their pockets off of your misery or off of your retirement. They don't like that. And Republicans have been doing their foolhardy best over the years to privatize both. And as Mike points out, he says, I think Social Security may go the route of pensions and union shops, where old timers get grandfathered into the current system, but those hired after such and such a date get at best a watered down retirement program or 401k. That is not wrong. This is what they keep saying. Oh, you folks over 55, you'll be okay. You'll be fine. This is for down the road. We're gonna. If you remember, this was the privatization scheme. We're gonna set up all little accounts, and you're gonna have a 401k like kind of thing with your money in, and it's yours. And completely negating what Social Security is at its core. The most important, the best anti-poverty program ever devised. This took an entire segment of the population and said, we're going to put a line in the sand and no one's going to go below it. We're going to ensure that poverty for seniors is not a thing. And it did. It massively, massively decreased the senior poverty in enormous ways. Look, I'm old enough to remember when you basically had poor houses. My mother worked in a nursing home that was for the indigent, and it was a hellhole. And I don't ever want to see us go back to that. And Social Security and Medicaid are you know, the parts that did that, you know, because Medicaid pays for old age care. You know, if you're indigent, it will pay for your nursing care or to have somewhere to go in your old age. They want to destroy and privatize this by trying to convince the younger generation, oh, you'll see a UFO before you'll see a Social Security check, which is nonsense. Social Security is, if we do nothing, we'll pay out, I think it's like 7 or 8 years down the road, it will drop from 100% down to 75% and then pay out forever. That's how the system is set up. We have a problem, and it's a good size problem, but the system itself is strong. What we have to do, this is the part, you have to put into it. Stop stealing from it. Had we not stolen all the money that we did from, the Johnson years back in the 60s, the Reagan era of the 80s, the Bush years, had we not done that, Social Security would be perfectly fine. But we get greedy politicians who just, it's like a bank. In fact, what was his name? Alan Simpson, the Simpson-Bowles Commission, you remember during the Obama years, who said, yeah, we spent all that money. It's gone. Yeah, we used it. So future generations are going to have to not have the security in old age that we should have. And understand, that has been the Republicans' wet dream list for a very long time. Privatize Social Security, put that money in the hands of Wall Street so, they can make money off of it. And as Mike points out, the attacks on Social Security, he says, are theoretical. I disagree. They're working their full-hearted best. But he points out that Medicare is something they've been attacking for decades. Go back to the Bush era and the Medicare Advantage plans that sprang up, the privatized schemes. You're going to get this private plan because private is so much better. Only, how did Medicare put it? 25% of seniors are on these privatized plans. 3/4 of seniors are on the traditional Medicare. And yet these Advantage plans cost more to pay for the 25% than what cost to pay for the 75%. And they don't get better outcomes. What they get are, lots of profit, as Mike points out. He said, and of course, upcoding. And we've talked about upcoding in the past, where they're always looking for something to diagnose you for, so they can charge more. And the reality here is, this is and look, during the Trump years, they came up with another scheme to make it even worse. Republicans have done their foolhardy best to destroy these programs without anyone really knowing about it. And this is, again, this is where Democrats fall down on the job, because some of them are actually in favor of some of these bad ideas. We want to give people choice because we've bought this narrative that we should have choice. Choice is good. Well, the choice between bad and worse, is that a good choice? The choice between I'm going to get denied over here or denied over there, is that a good choice? No. We want one plan that's going to make sure that everyone gets the care that they need when they need and how they need it. That's what we should be striving for. Instead of all of these schemes and gimmicks and band-aids and half-baked, half-concocted ideas on, hey, we could do this. And if you stand on one foot on a Tuesday and it's raining in a snowstorm, you'll get covered. No, we want to make sure that there's a baseline. But the thread that goes through all of this stuff is the profit motive. There's nobody on the Republican side saying, no, we want to make sure that we have a social safety net that leaves nobody behind. We want to make sure that there's a social safety net that takes care of nothing. You don't hear that. You hear how much it costs, how much we can profit from it, how dependent people are. I'm shocked in this moment that Democrats aren't, with every voice, talking about the Republican plan to increase inflation with this 30% tax on this federal tax, 30% on everything. And this idea that we're going to hold the globe hostage to kill Social Security to save it. It's remarkable to me. And we should be Granny should be getting her walker all fired up to get out in the street. Because while you may be okay today, your children and grandchildren are going to be screwed. Also, a handful of very rich people can have a little bit more. This is my problem.
WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's Choice for News Talk Radio.
streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. The Tyree Nichols traffic stop arrest video will be released tomorrow evening after five fired Memphis police officers are charged in his death. Shelby County District Attorney Steve Mulroy.
It's my hope that if there is any silver lining to be drawn from this very dark cloud, it's that perhaps this incident can open a broader conversation about the need for police reform.
CBS's Stephen Portnoy explains why feds searched President Biden's home last week for documents marked classified.
A source tells CBS News investigators were caught off guard when they first heard that Mr. Biden's attorneys did their own search on December 20th. We're told that was a factor in the decision to send in FBI agents for a full search of the home last Friday.
Former South Carolina lawyer Alex Murdaugh is on trial, accused of killing his wife and son. Colleton County Sheriff Sergeant Daniel Green on the stand.
Did you ever see any tears in your interactions with Mr. Murdaugh?
He did not appear to be crying. He was upset, but I did not see any visible tears.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. If you still need help with the rent and utilities after the COVID-19 pandemic, you must apply before January 31st. The Wisconsin Emergency Rental Assistance Program helped Wisconsin families with more than $500 million in rent and utility bills over the past 2 years. While the funds temporarily helped with rising housing costs, in addition to complications from the pandemic, it is not a permanent solution. The federal funding is nearly gone and the program is coming to an end. If you don't have broadband where you live, now is the time to correct the map. The FCC's draft of the national broadband map can be challenged by anyone, so check your address to see if they think you have services that aren't available to you. Federal funding will be allocated to build up the broadband infrastructure to make sure that everyone has access. Visit broadbandmap.gov. I'm Jane Matnair for Civic Media News.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Ty Christian from Lords of the Trident. Can you say Max Inc. Radio rocks, Jimmy K is awesome in Japanese?
Sure. Let's see. How do I say rocks? Let me see. Sugoi! Max Inc. Radio wa sugoi datta omoimasu. I just said you're great, you know.
Thank you. You're great too.
Original local music from Wisconsin. It's Max Inc. Radio on Civic Media. Saturday night, 6 p.m. to midnight. We are local music.
Thursdays at 11:30, we are joined by Dr. Michael McCutcheon, who is a psychologist, a lecturer, and additionally, he's won 10,000 fantasy football leagues and loves to help people make easy, free money. Dr. Mike fixes your life and your lineup.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
Ready for our little forest adventure?
Yes!
There's a forest closer than you think. Find a park or forest near you and music inspired by nature at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by USDA Forest Service and the Ad Council.
$15 each for the training. This is Jim Hightower saying, guess what? NRA then uses these worker training fees to fund its lobbying efforts that let restaurants pay poverty wages. And that, kids, is how inequality happens.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, a new Rasmussen poll out. I got to tell you, I'm loving the RNC pie fight. And again, this is one of these tests of how much power does Donald Trump still wield? Because he's in the I guess, the Rona McDaniel crowd. You've got DeSantis, who's coming out saying, I like what this Harmeet Dillon person's saying. But this Rasmussen poll My candidate is at the top of it. Mike Lindell, 30% of Republicans say they want him as the chair. Dylan, 20%. Rona McDaniels, 15%. I don't know who the rest. They didn't go through that. But I'm really, really, just for the comedy of it, I want the pillow guy at the top of the RNC. What fun would that be? Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the pie fight and, well, where we are, what's going on, and the McCarthy era. How are things going? That's why I've asked Jeff Timmer to come talk with us. Jeff is a political strategist and senior advisor with the Lincoln Project. Jeff, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, Rick, thanks for having me on. I always love coming on and talking to you. And you know why?
Why is that?
You're one of the few people who's ever invited me back.
I think you do good work. I think you're a good guy. I think you're right most of the time. Policy-wise, we may disagree, but I think saving democracy is something that, or saving the country from the depths of insanity is something we share.
Well, it is important, but it's I like to do it with a bit of humor while we're doing it. It's important work. It's necessary. It's essential. We're at a precipice. We keep getting past the dangers, the immediate dangers, but then the new ones always arise.
Yeah.
And now we have this battle to lead the RNC. You see all these headlines. Oh, Trump's power and influence is waning. All the evidence points to the exact opposite. He's as strong or stronger now in the Republican Party and in Republican circles than he ever has been. And he's played this RNC gambit just right. Rana was his handpicked choice to lead the RNC back when he won in 2016. She had chaired the Michigan Republican Party, somebody I know very well. She's Peter Principle in motion here. You rise to the level of your incompetence. Well, she has definitely surpassed her incompetence. And the last three election cycles has shown that. And it looked after the election like she was actually, even though she'd like had her ass handed to her three straight election cycles, was going to be able to coast to a re-election. But lo and behold, Pillows McCrack Pipe, jumps in the race. And now the National Committee woman from California, Dylan, I think she's going to win tomorrow. I really do. And I think Ron DeSantis was very careful and calculating with his endorsement of her today. And Donald Trump, I said, has played this very masterfully in the Trump way. Ronna was his choice. He's been very lukewarm and hasn't been effusive in his endorsement of her and his support of her.
Right.
So that whatever happens tomorrow, he's going to claim that's what I wanted.
No, he's somebody who knows, and this is where you have to give him credit. And I know some of my liberal friends are going to be, how dare you say nice things about him. But there's a guy who, when he puts his finger to the wind, he knows which way it's blowing.
Well, and it's usually because he hedges his bets. And so he'll say if somehow Mike Lindell, and it's not going to be Mike Lindell. The Republican voters don't get to choose this. It's members of the National Committee. Each state has three members. Each state and U.S. territory, including like the Marshall Islands and the Virgin Islands, have delegates that vote for this. So there's just a small number of Republican insiders, and the choice is going to come down between Ronna McDaniel and Hermeet Dillon. And I really think that the way this has evolved, that Ronna started the race in November at the highest point she was ever at, and she's done nothing but lose support since. And I think today Ron DeSantis made thinks is a shrewd move to kind of come sliding in, but he sees the writing on the wall. So he's going with somebody he is fairly certain is going to win so that he can start to show that this is going to be his party. But Donald Trump is also going to be able to claim that Dylan, who's a big Trump supporter, big MAGA, big America First, was his choice all along. Or if Ronna wins, that she was his choice all along. Or certainly if Mike Lindell wins, he's Trump's choice too.
Yeah, no, look, he's masterful at this because you can never hammer him down. And even when he's caught in a lie, he never apologizes and never backs up. That really is the mastery of what the current Republican Party has been able to get away with. Nobody, there's no shame. There's no conscience. So if you're shameless, there's no consequence.
Yeah, well, everyone always says, well, we have the receipts. Trump doesn't care if you have the receipts. He just doesn't care. He'll just lie. He'll not. He won the golf tournament. He wasn't even there, you know, for a couple days of it, but he won anyway. You know, this is the way Trump, that's how he rolls.
Yeah, I'm waiting for, you know, the, if you remember old Kim Jong-il, you know, he played golf, had 18 holes in one every time he went bowling, rolled a 300, and people bought it. I don't think we're that far down the road yet with Trumpism, but you talk to some supporters, they're all in. They bought the shirt, man.
Right. Well, Trump is strong like 10 men, and it's your duty to bear him many sons.
Well, there is that. So I also want to get your thoughts on Kevin McCarthy. He got his wish. I wanted him to be speaker. I want for him the heartburn and the acid reflux that's going to come with Marjorie Trainwreck Greene and the others constantly holding over him. We're going to steal this from you at any moment. I want to get your assessment of the first couple of weeks of the McCarthy reign. How do you put this?
Well, it's gone exactly as you could predict. He had to sell every modicum of integrity and character that he may have ever possessed in order to achieve his goal of getting the speaker's gavel. In order to do so, he had to give every bit of power to the crazies in his caucus. That battle that we all watched unfold, the 15 ballots in order to elect the speaker, it made it look like it was 20 loons against 200 normal people. And that's really what I think is a danger, because of those 200, 132 of those 200 are election deniers, voted to not to certify the last election. Yeah. We're normalizing the abnormal, because there's 20 people who are even crazier than the people who are completely crazy and authoritarian. So right there, he's leading a caucus that is crazier, more authoritarian, and more dangerous than the caucus that existed 2 years ago, and certainly 4 years ago. There are more Marjorie Taylor Greens and Matt Gaetzes among the new crop of representatives who came in January, people whose names we don't know yet.
Oh, no, they're elbowing
crazier, crazier.
No, and they're elbowing to get to the front of the pack. You know, I was saying before, you can look at Marjorie three names. You can look at gun fetish Barbie. You can look at some of these. They're now normalized. They're now where I'm amazed by it, but they are now the heart and soul of your former party.
They're the mainstream, and it's the people like a Mitt Romney or a Liz Cheney or an Adam Kinzinger who are the extreme fringe elements of the Republican Party, and it's Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene who are the mainstream Republicans these days, and they have something that they can use to control Kevin McCarthy as they go forward.
I mean, the fact
if you know what that is, if you remember the movie Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, where Michael Caine says to Steve Martin as they're in the midst of the con, he says, "Ruprecht, don't make me get out the genital cuff." That's how they control Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah, no, yeah, because there's a story this week. Evidently, he's having an affair with one of his male staffers, something along these lines.
Well, that's Gaetz. Yeah, that's supposedly Gaetz, not McCarthy.
No, Gaetz. You brought up Gaetz. Yeah. And yeah, I thought the genital cups, yeah, Gaetz.
Well, it looks like what we saw, kind of the dismantling of Madison Cawthorn, the North Carolina guy who was the Trump guy, the paraplegic, who the Republicans decided he was too extreme, too crazy for them. They took him out with a drip, drip, drip of just, you know, a whole bunch of awful things that he had done, salacious things. And it looks like you would think that the sex trafficking of minors would have been enough to take out Matt Gaetz, but not in this Republican Party. They need to, bring in a same-sex relationship before anybody gets their nose out of joint.
Is that going to take it? Because I'm like, okay, fine. If it's consensual, I don't care. You know, that's probably the best thing about him, I guess. It's his policies and the stuff that he wants to do to this country I have a problem with. Just look at this last week of the tax scheme. We're going to raise taxes on everybody 30% on sales tax. The attack on Social Security that's coming. That's the stuff that I'm interested in. The sideshow of what these people are doing behind closed doors, I could care less. It's about how they're going to affect the lives of workers. And that, to me, is the most offensive of all.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there. There's so much going on. There's so many sideshows that we get distracted by those bright, shiny things, whether it's George Santos and the complete and utter lunacy. I mean, the guy seems like an AI character that's made up, you know, completely out of fiction. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't even exist in real life, that he's a hologram of some kind. But, you know, whether it's Matt Gaetz or Marjorie Taylor Greene, any of the sensational stuff they do, it takes people's eyes off of the real dangers. And it's the 30% increase on everything that you buy, really, that's the way to deal with inflation? Huh, that seems a little counterintuitive. The cutting Social Security and Medicare, yeah, say you have to work until you're 72 or 75, and people like working, and so it's just wrong, and it's disrespectful to the people who have earned their retirement and paid into their retirement, that the Republicans, rather than actually confront the spending, rather than look at serious reforms, they're just looking to put the burden on to the people who've paid into the system and are now counting on it to be there for them.
Well, it's amazing. It's amazing, the gimmicks. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Jeff Timmer. Jeff's a political strategist and senior advisor with the Lincoln Project. You can check out their website, projectlincoln.us. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Now, you know, for me, I, again, this is one of those, I have people all the time tell me, and I'm sure you get this too, Jeff. Yeah, they're all corrupt. Both parties are the same. And I'm going, no, I don't know. I watched your governor's speech. You're in Michigan. I watched Governor Whitmer's speech yesterday talking about how we're going to help seniors, how we're going to, you know, help families, how we're going to actually get some stuff done. I see them as having some actual policies, and we can argue about those policies, but things that are going to move, hopefully make lives better. I look at the sideshow and the cruelty on the other side, and I don't know how you can make that statement that they're all alike. I'm curious, your thoughts on Whitmer's speech yesterday?
Well, I think it was a terrific speech, and I think she's done a great job. She's a model for other Democrats, especially in purple states, to look at how to govern in a way that co-opts the middle. She's certainly a progressive in her policies, but she's done and deliberately done a lot of outreach to the business community. She had tremendous support from business leaders in Michigan. Major business groups like the Detroit Chamber of Commerce supported her reelection. There was a huge group of Republicans for Whitmer. Many former elected officials and administration officials from previous Republican governors supported her. And that's really, and it's not because they agree. I was one of them. It's not because I agree with her on every single policy issue, but she's somebody you can sit down and have a reasonable discussion with and come up with a reasonable solution and compromise. We also don't really have the luxury in today's politics of sitting down and niff-gnawing about all the ins and outs of particular policies when democracy itself is at risk. And she's a great defender of democracy. And I think she's a model for other governors around the state or around the country to follow.
Yeah, is she in the mix if Biden decides not to run, or any thoughts?
Well, I think it. I'd like to see her run. I think she would bring a tremendous insight and experience that has often been lacking in national politics. Politics from the heartland, from the Midwest, as opposed to the coasts. I think that there is some element of that discussion that is often lost in the Democratic Party nationally. And I think, you know, people like Josh Shapiro or Gretchen Whitmer are people that should be looked at more by national Democrats in the unlikely event that Joe Biden doesn't run for re-election.
Yeah, Shapiro down the road. I want to see what he does as governor. I like Josh. He's been on this program a number of times. He was an incredible attorney general. Loved him in that role. I think he's going to do a great job as governor, maybe down the road. But Whitmer... going to be interesting to see how the next couple of years go, because, you know, you said Michigan's a purple state. You know, I'm looking at it going, it's looking like it's leaning the other way after this last election, and we'll find out more in 24. Also wanted to get your thoughts over the fight over Debbie Stabenow announcing she's going to retire.
Well, that's a seat where a Senate map that is already difficult for Democrats. They have to play a lot of defense in tough states. The key electoral vote states have Democrats running for re-election, like Pennsylvania, like Michigan. Well, Michigan, she's retiring. Wisconsin, Nevada, Arizona, but then there's also those Ohio and Montana and West Virginia. So there's a lot of defense the Democrats are playing. And the Republicans are going to be enticed to spend heavy in Michigan. Now, the Republicans have a problem. They don't have a very deep bench. The choices they have are a bunch of losers who've crazy MAGA candidates who've lost, whether it's Tudor Dixon, who was destroyed by Whitmer in the last election, or John James, who lost two previous runs for the U.S. Senate. They have a pretty shallow bench, but the Democrats have a kind of an abundance of talent. Other statewide elected officials, the Secretary of State, Jocelyn Benson, Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin, those are the two names talked about most. And Slotkin seems very certain to run. In fact, there was an article to this afternoon that she's expected to announce any day that she is, in fact, running. And she's won arguably the most purple district in the U.S. House now three times, and won it with solid fashion because she's a solid Democrat who makes effort to appeal to centrist and center-right voters on many issues.
I'm looking at this, and again, I come back to, you know, this past week and what the Republicans in the House put forth their priorities. I mean, this isn't Texas Hold'em. They put their cards right on the table. We're coming after Social Security. We're coming after Medicare. We're going to cause massive inflation by proposing. None of this stuff's going to actually happen because there's a Senate that won't allow it. There's a president that's going to veto it. But it's their priorities. This is what they're saying. We know it's not going to pass. This is what we're showing you our hand. I don't know how working people look at this and go, I'm sorry, you're all crazy. There's nothing I can vote for here.
Yeah. Well, it really seems it's unfortunate that we have to go through these kind of theatrics with the House Republicans, but it might be the wake-up call that America needs, that the pro-democracy majority of Americans, and I think it's a pretty solid number, it's kind of the galvanizing reminder that we all need that these guys are a bunch of kooks and we can't vote for them again.
That's a simple way. And this debt ceiling debacle is a part of it. I mean, my Congressman Scott, pardon me, Perry, right at the center of being one of those 20 kooks, I think there is a number of Republicans right now who in this debt, and I want to get your thoughts if you think this is different than 2011 and maybe why, but you know, I think they really want to shoot the hostage. I really do. I think they're hell-bent on touching the hot thing, pressing the button to see if, let's see if it really does melt down the global economy and cause a massive depression across the world. I think there are people now who seriously want that.
Yeah, in 2011, there were still the grown-ups in charge of the Republican Party. And you can say what you want about people like John Boehner or Paul Ryan and that ilk, but they understood what governing meant, and they understood those things that they had to do for political theater, and they understood what it when it push came to shove that they had to deliver votes to avoid crisis. And you're right, there's no awareness and there's no concern in today's Republicans in the House about any of that, and the grown-ups are not in charge. Even if in his feeble mind, if Kevin McCarthy believes that his role is to be like John Boehner in 2011, he will not withstand the day if he tries to cut a deal with the White House or the Senate. Yeah. That Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene and all of those Scott Perrys and kooks don't sign off on. They hold him hostage every moment of every day.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but you know, it's almost that I miss the days of Newt Gingrich and the Contract on America. As bad as those policies were, at least they were policies, and at least they were serious about, you know, doing this. Even if I thought they were horrible, at least they were something you could debate. This stuff, they're grabbing the third rail with both hands.
Yeah, all they care about is breaking things and getting attention. They don't care about accomplishing anything. They don't care about implementing any kinds of policies. They have no ideology. They have no personal moorings. And all they want to do is maintain power and get hits on Fox News and likes on their social media.
That's it. Like a 2-year-old in a china shop. But Jeff, I appreciate you taking some time sharing some thoughts with you. It's always great. I hope folks will check out your podcast. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at the Republic podcast. We'll get that out on social media. Jeff, appreciate the time, man.
Thanks, Rick.
Thanks so much. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Gonna take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1907. That was the day that President Theodore Roosevelt signed into law an effort to get corporate money out of national politics. The law was called the Tillman Act. The act was named after its chief sponsor, Senator Benjamin Tillman of South Carolina. President Roosevelt had fallen under public criticism for taking corporate money in his 1904 run for office. After he won the race, he included the issue in his address to Congress. Teddy said, "All contributions by corporations to any political committee for any political purpose should be forbidden by law." The resulting Tillman Act covered national banks and corporations. But the act had no real enforcement provisions. Since the passage of the Tillman Act, Congress has moved to further regulate campaign financing more than 10 times. Labor union contributions were regulated for the first time during World War II. During the war, unions were strictly prohibited from direct political donations. During the 1944 election, for the first time, the CIO, the Congress of Industrial Organizations, set up a political action committee. The PAC was to support pro-labor candidates and legislation. 3 years later, however, limits on union political spending were beefed up even further by the Taft-Hartley Act. The role of corporations and unions in campaign finance continues to be a hotly contested issue. In 2010, the United States Supreme Court decided the landmark case Citizens United. Their decision ruled that money equals speech. Corporations and unions can spend as much as they want on elections as long as they don't coordinate directly with individual campaigns. This has led to a flood of money by very wealthy donors into super PACs. More than a century after the passage of the Tillman Act, we still have not solved the question of election financing.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Real quick, Jenny sent me an email pointing out that the 538 blog evidently is being either sold or disbanded. She said it's one of her favorite sites and pointed out something I thought was interesting. You wonder why there isn't a lot of left and center media. Evidently, this 538 blog, which I guess loses like $6 million a year on $3 million revenue. So somehow, I guess it's an ESPN offering. They're trying to sell it. They lose tons of money. Media is expensive. Doing these kind of programs are expensive. I had a bunch of people say, the reason is U.S. media is based on advertisers and what consumers buy and liberals don't buy stuff. And that's all convoluted. The reality is our wealth class is willing to lose money to put out their message, whereas as the other side, the left, the center doesn't. It's about actual capitalist principles. You got to pay the bills. There isn't a billionaire behind them writing checks, because if you look at cable news, there isn't an awful lot of ads that are saying, "Hey, buy our stuff," like you would expect. It's a lot of front group money, pushing an ideology. It's a lot of, well, billionaire cash to set up, to keep them afloat, to do what? To use the Bush quote, catapult the propaganda. Because they understand being in your ear 24/7, regurgitating these simple talking points that come out of their think tanks, all of this coordination to get in your head to say, "Hey, unions are bad. You know, any government program that's going to help poor people, bad. Any social safety net, bad. Private corporations, good. Private corporations always act in their own best interests." And they do. Their best interests being profit for them and, well, less for you. This is where, again, it's masterful what they've done.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.